From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Friday, February 16th, release day for the film Black Panther. In just 1 week, the film has shattered box office records, torn down tired old stereotypes, and launched or elevated several stars in the movie world. The movie itself is gorgeously made. It is a lot of fun. It's a superhero movie, but it is more than that. It's a film that is truly, and it's hard to argue this point, important. Writing for the Atlantic Monthly, Adam Serwer says, quote, "The director, Ryan Coogler, asks if an African superpower like Wakanda existed, with all its power, its monopoly on the invaluable sci-fi metal vibranium, and its advanced technology, how could it have remained silent, remained still, as millions of Africans were devoured by the void?" End quote. There are hard, painful questions raised in the film. It dodges none of them. This hour, it's a chance to explore the themes and discuss why this film is already so significant. My guests in studio include Melanie Funches, who's Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association of Rochester. Melanie, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Also here, from just down the hall, Mona Isler, Executive Assistant, Staff Liaison to the Board at WXXI, and a comedy improviser extraordinaire herself. That's what I'm told.
It's the truth.
All right, Mona. Thanks for being here. It is awesome to have you in studio.
Thank you.
Also here with us is Willis Brooks. He's a PR rep at Entercom, an actor and box office rep for the Rochester Broadway Theater League. Willis, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Leslie Youngblood, the author of Love Like Sky, which is coming out when?
November 6th.
All right. Congratulations. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It was a few months ago when Melanie grabbed me and she said, "We're going to talk Black Panther at some point, right?" I said, "Yeah." And, you know, probably 3 months ago, there was some of the buildup was starting, but it certainly did not hit me until seeing the film and understanding and reading about all of the reaction, just how big this is. I want to ask first all of you, did you love it like you hoped to love it?
Wakanda forever.
Forever and ever.
Ever.
Second time, I'm going tomorrow again for the third.
So you've seen it twice?
Yep.
You've seen it, Leslie?
I've seen it once, and I will make my move there again this weekend, hopefully.
Okay, Melanie?
I've seen it once. People in my household virtually have seen it either twice or three times, going on four, and I will be seeing it again this weekend.
Okay, Mona?
I've only seen it once, but I'm confident I'll see it at least four times.
Wakanda forever for you?
It was perfect from beginning to end.
So let's start there. Did you have any fear at all that it wouldn't live up? I mean, because sometimes when there's a ton of hype for anything, movies, music, whatever, it's hard to live up to it.
I didn't walk in with expectations about what I was going to see. I walked in knowing that Black excellence was everywhere to be found, from the cast to the director. So I knew it was going to be great, but it exceeded every expectation I could have had.
Okay, Melanie?
I walked in knowing it was going to be lush and lovely with Black magic dripping everywhere, right? Because, for the same reasons that Mona said, but also because I knew the comic, there was enough there to create an incredible story.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, listeners, if you don't know the story of Black Panther and you don't read the comics, I thought the film really was pretty self-contained in the story that it told, and that you didn't have to be sort of steeped in the comic lore.
No, you didn't. But the thing is that it should. People have been talking about, you know, well, what is all this hype over Black Panther? You know, there were other people before Black Panther. What about Hancock? What about Blade? Black Panther was the first mainstream Black superhero in 1966, written by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. Exactly. He was the first. And so for that to be said, you know, he was due. Just because like you had Thor and Spider-Man and everybody before them, this was a character that their time had come and it was due.
Stan Lee makes a little cameo at the casino at the table in the movie, and I didn't even know he was still with us because he's getting older. But it was neat to see.
Yes, he makes a cameo in every Marvel universe.
Oh, I and see. I didn't know that.
And you didn't know.
I did not know that.
As a follower of the Marvel universe, Stan Lee makes a cameo in every Marvel movie, no matter who the hero is, no matter what it is.
Well, so let's go around the table then, Leslie. Did any part of it not live up to what your hopes and expectations were?
Not one second. Every second lived up to my expectations. And not having read the comics, not really being familiar with the comics, I came in with, as Melanie said, with just that expectation of Black excellence. I knew that it was going to be great, and it definitely exceeded that for me.
Okay, Willis?
I didn't know what to expect.
Get right on that mic for me.
Didn't know what to expect. I gotta admit, when like all the hype building around it, I was a little afraid if it would be presented well. It's the only thing going into that, for the first time ever, I knew what I wasn't going to see. And I wasn't going to see a movie starring predominantly African-American actors that made fun of African-American actors and the stereotypes that have surrounded them.
That's a good point.
I wasn't going to see. But it far exceeded everything that I could have imagined.
Now, listeners, we'll invite your phone calls, especially if you've seen the film. I had a chance to see it on Wednesday, and I know what you're hearing is a lot of love for this movie. It is an extraordinary film. I mean, it's an extraordinary film, but it's also important. Now, for those who haven't seen the film and they want to get caught up a little bit, we'll do a little bit of spoilers this hour, so be warned that if you haven't seen the film yet, we are going to talk about some of what happens in it. Melanie, because you, I think, more than anybody on this panel, probably understands the comic and the full story, why don't you just remind the audience what the story of Wakanda is in brief there?
The story of Wakanda is basically the story of an African nation. What would have happened? It's a story of what if. What of an African nation that was never touched by colonization. In Wakanda, the people of Wakanda were there. Meteorite fell, vibranium, it infused everything in this. And this land was untouched by colonization. So these Africans were there just to grow and to evolve as they naturally would grow and evolve without anyone coming and stripping them of their personhood, stripping them of their natural resources. They were just able to be. So that's what resonates for people so much is that it gives us the idea of what if. What if colonization had never happened? What could we be?
And you know, Mel, I was talking to a friend after the movie and I said, if I've got one quibble, I felt like I was looking at what would have happened without colonization, the international slave trade, regardless of vibranium, regardless of whether a meteorite falls out of the sky and hits a country. And I said to a friend—
But it has to be Marvel Universe.
I know. See, that's the thing. I was sort of naive. I said, why did they need the vibranium? He said, because it started in a comic book. You know? I mean, like, there's going to have to be cool suits and, you know, powers and skills. So I take the point. But the separate point being, what you're looking at is what we could have had in this world without colonization and an international slave trade. But if listeners, if you're wondering, well, but how does Wakanda exist in sort of a modern context if it's super technological? It's because it's concealed itself. It has allowed the rest of the world to believe that it is a super impoverished place, that it doesn't have the technology that it has, and that vibranium is known but is thought to have been exceedingly rare instead of being in abundance there. Right? Is that right? Okay. So now I want, before we even get to more of the plot and the details, because one of the things this film has is the most compelling, I guess it's a villain, but it's more of an anti-hero?
Anti-hero.
An anti-hero. Just a remarkably compelling character there. I want to ask all of you, and I'll go around the table starting with Melanie. Why is this film, for people who kind of either don't get it, haven't seen it, don't understand, and I think Willis hit on some of the themes already, but tell me about the importance of this film going forward.
Wow. One, representation matters, that we are able to see a whole plethora of ways of being that are all rich and lush, and none of them speak to stereotypes. You know, you see the women, you see Okoye, you see Shuri, you see Nakia, and they are strong women. But they're not Mammy. They're not the Sapphire. They are strong. Shuri is, I said, she's the Disney princess that we've been waiting for. You know, she is a scientist. She's a technological wonder in and of herself. Yes, they have vibranium, but she has the intellect to know how to process. We have T'Challa. I mean, not for nothing. Both the antagonist and the hero are both Ivy League educated. I know if you read, Killmonger went to MIT. You know, he's no slouch. He's not just, there are no thugs in this movie. There are no slaves in this movie. It is everything that, you know, what we could be. You know, when you look at the warriors, the secret service for the king is a service of women. That is amazing in and of itself.
Okay. Mona.
We only have an hour, so I'll try to keep it brief. But I think one of the most important things for me was, as an American woman, was being able to see how beautifully representative many nations of Africa were in this country. This is a movie that beautifully blends technology in ways that we haven't been able to ever process, vibranium and all that kind of stuff, while still maintaining the essence of what it means to be African in terms of keeping our spirituality, in terms of maintaining our rituals. And I mean, the entire scene at Warrior Falls brought me to tears. So it's a movie that does both. We are both brilliant scientific, you know, geniuses, and we also still are, you know, these spiritual warrior Ashe, beings. You know what I mean? And we can exist totally in the same space at the exact same time.
Okay. Leslie?
I think one of the things that I definitely love about Black Panther, and why I know it's so needed for not just adults, but for kids, for people of all ages. Just recently, I spoke at a career day at a high school, and I was telling the kids, as you know, my life as a writer, I've visited Ghana twice, and I told a group of students that I taught in Ghana, and this is a true story, and this breaks my heart. I said I taught in Ghana, and she looked at me and she said, I did not know there were universities there. This was 2 days ago. Well, actually, on the 16th, this 2 days before the release of Black Panther. So that alone should tell us that this is important. This representation matters. This young girl did not know or did not have the images in her mind of Africa being a place of universities, of someplace other than what those images that we see that are dispelled with Black Panther. And I think it's so much needed, and we need so much more of it.
Okay, Willis?
What I love most about this movie is the villain. Like, I love a good villain, and I feel like a lot of appreciation has to go to Ryan Coogler in that, because I know the comics too, and Killmonger, the same thing happens. Like, he beats him in ritual combat, but he goes to take the heart shape.
Spoiler alert.
I'm sorry.
Spoiler alert.
He takes the heart. This is the comic book, though. He takes the heart-shaped herb, and he falls into a coma because he's not of royal blood. When he changed that character in the slightest bit, just connecting him so much more to the ancestry and royalty, it made him so much more powerful.
Absolutely.
It made every decision he made in that movie a lot more powerful. And I just want to, like, give a shout-out to Ryan Coogler, because he is, like, he has not made a feature presentation without Michael B. Jordan in it, and that's just, it's a wombo combo whenever they make anything.
They should just shut it down and give Michael B. Jordan the statue. He is phenomenal in this film, because any Marvel movie, and I don't watch all the superhero movies, but sometimes it feels like, you know, the villains are cartoony instead of an anti-hero whom, for many parts of the movie, you find yourself going, wait, he's kind of making an important point. So let's talk a little bit about this. The idea of, if you've been hearing the term Killmonger, Eric Stevens, I think, is how he grows up as a boy in Oakland, but he is connected, and I don't want to give too much away, but he's connected to Wakandan royal blood. He knows it, and has an interest in getting back, and grows up feeling that resentment, growing up feeling like, if there is this African superpower, where have you been? Why aren't you helping people around the world who look like me, who have been oppressed? And I think, Melanie, I'm going back to the comics, but also the movie. I think the first explanation is Wakandan leadership, whether it's T'Challa, his father T'Chaka, others have known, or at least feared, that if the world knows our story, they're going to come and try to take us.
Correct.
Exactly.
And that we have to protect ourselves first.
Correct.
So yes. I think that they have, like, operatives around the world in various places.
All over the world.
And they're doing sort of operations here and there, but they're not sort of out and about, like, they let the world think Wakanda is not Wakanda.
Right.
Because they got to protect themselves. Is that roughly
that's
the
answer?
That's
it. That's exactly.
So Eric Stevens grows up, and the reason he gets named Killmonger is he ends up going to fight, as he says in the film, he fights in Afghanistan, fights in Iraq, serves U.S. military. He's a great warrior, and he gets nicknamed Killmonger because he's so effective. But he's decided that Wakanda has not done enough and that it's time to use Wakanda's technology, vibranium, to create weaponry that can take down the oppressors, that can arm the oppressed around the world. And he wants to start a revolution. And there are, you know, that's complex, Mel. I mean, it's not
yes,
like
it is.
It's not an easy thing to say, well, that guy's, where's he coming from?
You know, he makes very valid arguments. And at the same time, it poses the question, what does liberation look like? You know, and I've had this conversation multiple times to say, do you really want to get free or do you just want to be the oppressor yourself? You know, how do we wrestle with that? Because we spend a lot of times, a lot of the conversations since then have talked about the thing with Wakanda being isolated and the thing between T'Challa and Killmonger. I also would like to discuss the relationship between T'Challa and M'Baka, who is a tribe, and when, I don't want to give any spoilers, but there's a connection there too. And it said, you did not talk to us either. You know, so there's a whole other thing there about, if you blow it out, about Africans on the continent and the children of the diaspora in America and the connection and disconnection of us.
If I could, I'd like to read a little the piece that moved me the most after seeing the film, and I tried to read a ton just because I just wanted to soak it up, was by Adam Serwer in the Atlantic Monthly in a piece called The Tragedy of Eric Killmonger. And Serwer's piece, number one, had me going back and restudying things like the Middle Passage, the Door of No Return, mm-hmm. you know, looking out at the void. Powerful stuff. And Serwer writes about that nuance in this character. So let me quote from his piece, and we'll continue this part of the discussion. So Serwer writes, quote, Killmonger's stated purpose to liberate black people all over the world has sparked a lively discussion over whether he is a bad guy to begin with. What could be so bad about black liberation? I fist-pumped in the silent dark theater when he was laying out his plans, writes Brooke Obie at Shadow and Act. It's a good idea, I said. That Coogler's villain has even inspired this debate is a testament to how profound and complex the character is. Killmonger's goal in his eyes, the global liberation of black people. But that is not truly his goal, as Coogler makes clear in the text of the script and in Killmonger's interactions with other characters. Killmonger's goal is world domination. The sun will never set on the Wakandan Empire, Killmonger declares, echoing an old saying about the British Empire, to drive the point home as clearly as possible. He sees no future beyond his own reign. And it is remarkable that many viewers seem to have taken the liberation part at face value and ignored the empire part, which Michael B. Jordan delivers perfectly. They are equally important. Killmonger's plan for black liberation, arming insurgencies all over the world, is an American policy that has backfired and led to unforeseen disasters perhaps every single time it has been deployed. It is somewhat bizarre to see people endorse a comic book version of George W. Bush's foreign policy, as long as the words black liberation are used instead of democracy promotion, end quote. That's Adam Serwer. What do you make of that, Mona?
It is dead on. And the reason why Killmonger is, he's a fully fleshed out character. You find yourself cheering for him throughout the course of the movie. But there's also another character in the movie who completely believes that Wakandan resources can be used to liberate people around the world, and that's
Bring
Nakia.
Yes.
There are two characters who believe the same thing, but their end goals are completely different. And so that's what keeps me from, you know, hashtagging Killmonger was right, because he didn't want to liberate black people around the world for the sake of freedom. He wanted to do it so that he could bring others under subjection, which is completely the antithesis of what Nakia wanted to do. She really wanted to just liberate people. That's the first thing we see, spoiler alert, is that she is actually in country, in Nigeria, speaking the language, trying to free women from slavery, and then ends up freeing a young man from...
Freeing a child soldier.
From being a child soldier. So we have these two characters who want to do the same thing, but their end goals are completely different.
Yeah, and here's Serwer's conclusion on exactly that point. He says, the following distinction is crucial. Black Panther does not render a verdict that violence is an unacceptable tool of black liberation. To the contrary, that is precisely how Wakanda is liberated. It renders a verdict on imperialism as a tool of black liberation, to say that the master's tools cannot dismantle the master's house.
Thank you, Audre Lorde. That's Audre Lorde's quote. So Adam Sword borrowed from Audre Lorde, and I want to give her big up props because it's her line.
Powerful.
Yes. And it's, you know, I thank you, Mona, for talking about Nakia, because the thing is, if you learn nothing else from Black Panther, trust black women. You know, because it's like seeing someone who's actually saying, doing, putting their hands to the cause of liberation of people, you know, and of the upbuilding of people. Because, spoiler alert, in that same scene, T'Challa sees the guy with the gun. He says, stop, he's a child. And it speaks to, even like, spoiler alert, in... when the ritual the first ritual battle happens, that they can complete the battle and do what needs to be done and complete the ceremony without death. That we can have ascension of power. We can have all these things without death. And it was just in the context of the movie, that's amazing.
Let me ask our other guests, Leslie and Willis, your thoughts on Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger.
Well, I think the whether you're writing comics, screenplays, novels, what you strive to do is to make your characters to get empathy from your characters. And I think that's what we're able to do with Killmonger. Whether we agree or disagree, we empathize, mm-hmm. we understand. And that is what I think was done so brilliantly, is that regardless of you take this stance that he takes, you empathize, you can see his point, you see him as a fleshed out character. And that's one thing I really appreciate it.
I think it was Jamel Bowie who was writing about the fact that, you know, Coogler gives you enough of the clues, even early on, though, with Killmonger. I mean, he shoots his own girlfriend.
Exactly.
When he has to, or decide to. Thank you, Willis. That he has become so moved by his mission that he starts compromising in certain ways that I think most people would say are out of bounds. But the overall goals that he has, again, are understandable. I want to get Willis's take after. Let's listen to Michael B. Jordan. This is him in an interview in New York City for the promotion of the film, talking about this character.
I'm the antagonist. I like to say antagonist.
Oh, you're not a bad guy.
I like to say I'm an antagonist.
Okay, all right, antagonist.
It's a cool conversation being had between, you know, T'Challa and Killmonger, and I think they both make valid points, you know, and I feel like they're both really relatable. So, you know, if I could have you feeling some type of way about the quote-unquote bad guy or the villain and make you, you know, question, you know, who you want to see, you know, on top, I think we did a good job.
What do you think, Willis?
I went and saw this movie with about 12 friends of mine, and we took pictures in the theater. We dressed up. We did not think we were going to a movie. That was not the idea. We thought we were going to have an experience. We dressed as if we were going to a ball or something. And the pain that he expressed in that movie was so relatable on so many levels that it made us happy and sad after it was over. And I just feel that there was something to that, because when he did things, when he said things, I knew that his ultimate goal was what you said, world domination, and it was something darker than what I was imagining as I was watching it. But there was no point where I was happy when he ultimately was defeated. Like,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. I rooted for him the entire movie, because I related to his struggle and what he had been through. And I just feel like that, to make me feel for someone who was supposed to be an anti-hero or a villain that much, that's what was so powerful.
And on that point, spoiler alert, at his defeat, there's two themes to go back to. Number one, T'Challa again gives a defeated opponent the chance to live.
Exactly.
But this
yes.
time, Killmonger's line is devastating.
It broke my heart. That last line, it's the most poignant moment in the entire movie. And there's a lot of good stuff going on. But that moment, the words he spoke, literally brought me to tears.
You can describe it, Mona, because we've let people know there are plenty of spoiler alerts. Go ahead.
He says, he offers him, you know, to reprieve. And he says, no, I want you to bury me in the ocean with my ancestors, because they knew that death was better than bondage. And he's speaking of the slaves or people
the
who were
passage.
At the middle passage, as they were going crossing over, who jumped ship, who would rather die than live in bondage.
Right.
And that moment, it is the most poignant moment for me in the entire movie.
So many spirituals. Before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave. I mean, it takes us back to all of that. That has such a something understandable, but then we're also thankful for the ones who did live, who did survive. So that's just that complexity of the character. Mm-hmm. I mean, it broke my heart as well.
You know, for me, that whole scene, the fact that when they were finished in battle, and he was there, and Killmonger was dying, he said, "My father said that the Wakandan sunsets are beautiful," and T'Challa carried him to see it. He was able to see through his father's eyes. You know, Killmonger was able to see through his father's eyes what it was. And even in the midst of that, they have this thing. Because my heart was broken because when I looked at that character, but frankly, when I look at Michael B. Jordan, I see my son. You know, and my heart was broke because I'm hearing the pain. Because if you, spoiler alert, when he is buried and he takes the heart of the purple flower and he goes in, instead of him, because they are lost, he goes back to that apartment rather than going back to the ancestors. Mm-hmm. And the relation mm-hmm. from the comic, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like he says, you know, and he has that conversation with his father, and he says, "Are we lost or are they lost?" And it's like, "Nah, we lost," you know, because it's just the two of us in this tiny space. And his father trying to let him know, like, his father was crying, you know, because this is not where we're supposed to be.
Right.
I was just like, right. You know, it's like
moving.
I can't
me just hear you describe
honest,
it.
It's, honestly, yep, I'm gonna I'm trying to hold back the tears. Yep. It's deep.
It allowed for so much. It allowed for closure that some people don't even get.
Like, yes. I mean,
that's a great point.
It does. And helping people to understand. I mean, and understanding the concept of, like, I'm sorry, I'm having a moment. understanding all the different complexities of ancestorship and eldership. You know, how, you know, what happened between T'Challa and M'Baka. And then, but when they're in that same situation, what happened to Zuri? You know, Zuri was a shaman. You know, I mean, and it's like, yo, uncle, you know, it's like, it. I know you feel me.
Yeah.
So please say something, because my brain
well,
is just
I mean,
like.
The only thing I want to, I think, and what you're hearing us discuss are the many layers of this movie. It's not just a comic book movie. It's a brilliant comic book movie. I mean, in the Marvel Universe, this is at the top of the game. But the reason why people of color, and not only people of color, but predominantly people of color, are reacting the way that we're reacting to a movie that's visually stunning, and is that there are so many layers of our history that Ryan is just a sort of peeling back,
yes,
scene after scene. He is exposing the things that we've been dealing with, that we've been afraid of, or that we're unable to verbalize. He's taking it, putting it up on, you know, the giant screen, and is telling our story the way it should be told.
Absolutely.
All of the time.
And not just the good part. He's telling all the complexities.
Right.
Of us, our
the challenges.
He's telling us in light and in shadow. Mm-hmm. You know, he's telling us the fullness of who we are. Like, when, spoiler alert, when T'Challa goes into the state the second time and is able to stand with the ancestors and say, "Yo, what was y'all going through?" You know, it was like, you know, and that's the thing, you know, because we wrestle with our elders and we wrestle with our ancestors, and because we have to live their decisions, you know, and we have to live their choices. And it's just amazing.
I found that scene devastating, and there's just another remarkable layer. And if you hear Melanie talking about T'Challa going to visit his ancestors, and you're going, wait a second, I haven't seen the movie, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, spoiler alert. But when there are moments when the Black Panther can go to the ancestral plane, which is where T'Challa goes, and the second time that Melanie is describing, he is confronting his ancestors, his father, saying, how could you leave a boy behind without a father to suffer in oppression, knowing he was going to suffer? And obviously the larger question is, it's not just one boy. It's
all of us.
It's all of us.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's a population of people around the world. And T'Challa didn't know. And T'Challa says, you were wrong. And T'Challa is recognizing two things. Number one, he's got to defeat this, you know, so-called quote-unquote villain or anti-hero. He has to, because the anti-hero, while driven by that pain and rage that is understandable, is now hell-bent on kind of destroying the world a little bit.
Right. Destroying everything. Mm-hmm.
And being willing to kill people like Zuri and killing his own family if mm-hmm. he has to. So he knows he has to defeat him, but he also says, we created him. I mean, and that's deep, terrible stuff.
Yes. And the thing is, he's not just talking to his father. If you remember in the scene, he's talking to the ancestors. All of the Panthers from years gone by into infinitum, they're all there. So if you look behind him, his grandfather, his great-grandfather, his great-great-grandfather, his great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather are all there. And we are, because we as a people are the sum total of our ancestral knowledge. We are the sum total of our ancestral decisions. He's standing there like, I know you, like, T'Chaka made the choice, but there was something that was put in him by his father and his father's father and his father's father that led him to that place.
I loved how mad he got when he went back to the ancestral plane, because that it just let me know that he understood. He didn't just leave Killmonger behind. He left everyone. He left everyone that had gone over to America in the Middle Passage and everywhere else to live without a father, for that analogy, but to live without who they were,
yes,
as a people.
Well, and at a risk of misinterpreting part of the film, I felt like, you know, Wakanda is, there is not a superpower African nation, but there are plenty of white people who allowed this to happen. I felt like a little bit of that's, at least some of that's directed at white people who have allowed that oppression, who've created that oppression. At least that's how it landed with me. I mean, he's talking to his father. He's talking to the ancestors of Wakanda. He's talking to people who could have had the power to do something. That was a very difficult scene. And I see I'm late for a break. I want to also ask about one of the end credit scenes. Spoiler alert.
Yes.
Because you talk about a complex film with a complex anti-hero. Killmonger does not... It is not a verdict that he was wrong. It's a verdict, I think, that maybe some of the other means are better. But we'll talk a little bit about the ending and what it means here with our guests. We're talking about Black Panther, the remarkable film that's out now, with Mona Issler, who is from right here at WXXI, a comedy improviser, staff liaison of the board here, executive assistant, one of my favorite people. Melanie Funches is Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association of Rochester. Leslie Youngblood is the author of the forthcoming Love Like Sky. Willis Brooks is a PR rep at Entercom, an actor, and a box office rep for the Rochester Broadway Theater League. We'll come back, continue the conversation next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, when we talk about redesigning cities, are we only thinking about wealthy people and businesses? The Community Design Center has an upcoming event focused on how to design sustainably for low-income communities, combining architecture, community development, and social activism. Then we check in on the Finger Lakes wine scene. When you think about Finger Lakes wine, what do you think about? We'll talk about the business and science of winemaking. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's talk about some of the end credit stuff of Black Panther, because there's two end credit scenes. And I think let's talk about that first scene. It's at the UN, and T'Challa is there. And I thought that was a scene that said, to me at least, Mona, to me that said, Killmonger may be gone, but the message was at least received that we can do more. Okay. We don't have to do it the way he wanted it.
Correct. Mm-hmm. We are the most powerful nation on this planet. My sister is the smartest woman on this planet, and we have resources. We have the ability to help, and we're going to help within the scope of what we think is appropriate. So we're still going to maintain control, but we're going to help, and we're going to help, and not in the way that Eric wanted to. World domination is not our goal.
But what I think was really important is the response to that. The response was, spoiler alert, the response was, what can farmers, I'm not quoting exactly, but what can farmers do for us? Or what can farmers teach us? And that's where I think it ends for that first scene, right? So we have to understand, here's Wakanda. They're coming, telling you what they have to offer. And based on the perception that is portrayed
by dominant culture,
right, the dominant culture, they have nothing to give. I mean, and that speaks today. What can you?
That's today.
Right. That's
that was
today.
A very realistic.
That's another
response.
Layer.
That's right. That's right now.
That is another layer. Unless what you can dribble a basketball,
right,
or run into the end goal, what could you possibly contribute?
What can
to
you
us
give
tonight?
Us? What can you teach us? And that hit home for me.
You know, see, for me, I was just like, what it was when you saw T'Challa's face. When you saw their face, when he said it, like, we could show you better than we can
exactly.
tell you.
Exactly. Right? I love and, that part.
You know, so for me, was that didn't surprise me at all because the dominant culture has never seen.
Exactly.
We've always got to show you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got to show you. Like, that, I mean, that scene is a microcosm of Black Panther in, not as a movie, but Black Panther in our society. People said, this movie broke the myth that a movie with a predominantly Black cast, a movie with a Black director, a movie that was centered in Blackness could not, you know, compete, you know? And basically dominant culture, white Hollywood said, you know, this can't do. The UN, the European at the UN said, what can you teach us? Both T'Challa and the Wakandans and we with Black Panther have taught both. Lessons. It's a parallel message.
Right. He just has that smirk to say, okay, we'll show you.
And I just want to put a fine point on Melanie's point is $277 million domestically, $228 million foreign, with a total of $500 million in ticket sales.
And it ain't been a week.
In 6 days.
And I'm not surprised. I mean, that... Look what we're working with. We're working with Black excellence. We're working with people who are hungry, is the word that I hear so often. We're hungry for that. We need it. It's out there. And I'm not surprised at the box office totals.
But what the thing is, the second half of that scene, and Willis, I want you to comment on this as a young person. What you see in the second half of that scene is he comes and he buys back the block.
Yes.
You know, the economic engine that is set up.
I bought that building, that one over there, this one. This is going to be the first.
And you're going to teach STEM to all of these people.
Yeah. And I loved even the kids in the parking lot at that point.
Yes.
I loved how they just saw this man come down. And for the first time, it wasn't like, what are you kids doing? What's going on here? They were in awe of this man and what he was bringing to the neighborhood. And it's only the beginning. And
And he put it in the hand. And he put it in the hands of who?
Sheree, of course.
His sister.
And Black women.
The thing is, they accepted it at full face value.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It was completely.
This yours?
This is yours? Oh, yeah. You want to see it? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? At full face value, that there was someone who was, he clearly carried himself in a way that these are important people, and I'm going to follow. You know what I mean? They follow. You want to experience greatness around you all the time. That's what's the most important thing about these, our kids seeing this and seeing brilliant women and seeing, you know, strong, capable men who were not subject to male toxicity.
Yes.
They were able to defer to women and they didn't have to be macho. They could just be men. They could cry. They could feel. I mean, this movie has something for everyone to dispel myths left and right, just striking it down left and right everywhere you turn.
I
mean,
love that.
When you said that, there's a piece that's in the trailers that where Okoye says to T'Challa, don't freeze. He says, I never freeze. And he gets down there and they said, and then Okoye asked Nakia, did he freeze? Like an antelope in the headlights.
Their humanity is important. And that's what I love.
And he saw the woman he loved and he froze. He was like, oh wow, she's pretty. I love her. Right? It's like, it wasn't that toxic masculinity that he was like, yeah, I never freeze. I see the good girl. Oh, I froze. Right?
There was humanity in every character, even Killmonger. Like, oh, that, you're not going to tell me that's made of vibe. Nah, I'm just feeling it.
Yeah.
Like,
when he took the mask. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know you want to talk about the other end credit, but we can't end this conversation without talking about Wakabi. And that's Daniel Kaluuya.
Kaluuya's
character. Yes. And how sometimes we make bad choices born from pain.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. His, you know, Claw killed his family.
Yes.
And he was, can I say hell? Hell bent on
revenge.
bringing this man to justice. And when his best friend wasn't able to provide what he wanted, regardless of the circumstances, I mean, there's a reason why he didn't bring Claw home. It didn't matter. And when he found himself next to someone who he thought, who did do exactly what he needed to do, he fell in line.
Yes, he did.
Behind him. And I think that's also sort of a story about sometimes the choices that we make in our lives because we're hurt.
Yes.
Because we're in pain, because we're broken. And someone comes along and kind of puts a bandage on it. And then we can, you know, we want to
yes.
do. He made awful, terrible choices against people that he loved, against his own country, because somebody gave him a little bit of something that he wanted.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, but see, putting on my mental health hat, it's about what happens to untreated trauma. Because mm-hmm. in Killmonger, in Wakabi, in all of these characters, when you have untreated trauma, you know, like if we want to go about this, think about Nakia. As much as Nakia loved T'Challa, she left Wakanda because she couldn't reconcile their not doing what they're supposed to do. I'm going to take it. I love my country. I love my man. But I can't marry you because if I marry you, I become queen. If I become queen, it means I have to do this. I'm not willing to do this. I'm going to go over here, right? All the expressions of pain with someone you love, you know? But with Killmonger and with, oh God,
Wakabi,
it's about, you know, when trauma goes untreated. He lost his family and he was just supposed to fall back in.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent those years, and his father never, you know, T'Chaka never dealt with it. And here comes T'Challa. He says, I'm going to get him, and he wouldn't let him go. You know, T'Challa once said, no, I need you to stay here in case something goes wrong, right? Mm-hmm. I need you to stay here, which was a logical thought, because he's the one who he trusted most. But at the same time, when he didn't bring him back, it just brought back all that pain, mm-hmm. and like you said, untreated trauma. It was never dealt with. So he didn't know this guy from a can of paint, but because he brought him the head of Claw.
Yeah.
Because your enemy is my enemy. Now I'm,
your friend.
I had a 12-year-old ask me, their mother asked me if, like, their child should see the movie. And I was just, I tried to give, like, as brief of a what they need to be prepared for as possible. But I just said, like, the movie deals with loss and how you deal with it and what you deal with after you've experienced a loss. And that was the best. I tried to compare it to Lion King, if you're 12 years old, seen that, because that was the best comparison I could give at that time. But it's just like what you do with the pain after.
Yes.
And your grief, dealing with grief.
Because
mm-hmm.
all the major characters dealt with grief, because T'Challa even dealt with the grief of the loss of the perfection thought of his father.
Mm. Exactly. Mm.
Yeah. When he entered the ancestral plane the second time, he was like, yo! I thought you was everything. What was you going through? That's not what he said, y'all. But it's like, when you look at all the different types of loss, you know, and all the different things, like, you know, even in that end credit, the first end credit, when he brings Shuri there, he says, this is where our father killed his brother. This is the space. So, I mean, and that is the cyclical way that is African, that we are going to redeem this space. This is why I picked this space, mm-hmm. you know? And his sister, because she didn't have the understanding, she said, oh, look, they're good, they're going to tear it down. I said, no, they're not. I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought that one and that one, and we are going to rebuild it, and we're going to do the thing that should have been done in the beginning.
And we're going to start here.
Yes.
Where we left one behind.
I want to ask our guests if they think that the equation has really changed because of Black Panther. There is an article in Forbes that talked about how Hollywood, for years, when there would be a leading actor of color, would use a weaker than anticipated box office to justify just simply going back to mostly white leads. Now, there's never been a film like this at this level of production that's almost all black cast and black director and black writer. But still, Forbes has said the history of Hollywood is not very inclusive, and it's usually to look for reasons to say no to this. This film, can that change that?
Well, Hollywood says yes to money.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a good point.
So, I mean, I don't think Hollywood cares that the characters are black.
But I guess, Monica, I feel like that will be true if it's not just the next Black Panther and the next Black Panther, but there are everything from dramas to rom-coms to everything else that are really building on this understanding of excellence. And not just in the Black Panther
but
franchise.
But Evan, understand, we've done that. Because if you look at Girls Trip, had amazing box office, black director. Get Out, black director, amazing box office. There's been four major films this year that have had black male directors with lead black characters in them that have done the doggone thing. We have come, we have shown, we have proved, we have brought the preponderance of evidence.
More than once.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So whether it changes or not, we know that it's not, that if it doesn't change, it's not because we have not shown and proved that we can drip black accidents like gold over the Wakandan hills, but it's because you are choosing to live in your place of ignorance and you're choosing to live on stereotype. But it's not that we haven't proven the case.
Correct.
The case has been proven. Case closed.
All right, so we saw our friend Chris on Twitter says, today's Black Panther episode of Connections brought to you by the hashtag spoiler alert. And I got an email from a listener, Tim in Pittsburgh, said he had to change the station because we were talking about the entire movie. I'm sorry, Tim.
Sorry, Tim.
Sorry, Tim.
But, you know, this is important. And talking about what happened in this film, it's hard to have a conversation because it's not just about a cool film, which, by the way, if you haven't seen the film, here's another thing it is. It's fun. The technology is cool. Mm-hmm. It's really well done. It's gorgeously shot.
It's
so
funny.
Yeah, right. It is. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, so it's all of those things.
Hometown hero.
Yeah. Winston Duke playing Mbaka.
Right from here.
Yep, from a Brighton High School graduate. So it's all of those things. But we couldn't, and I'm sorry to Tim and others who felt like we kind of spoiled it for you, we couldn't really talk about the depth of this film without talking about what happened in this film. So I do apologize for that. And a listener named Angela emailed to ask, what do your guests want white people to get from this film? That's from Angela.
What I would like for my white friends, and I know I have a number of my white friends who are listening, I would like you to get this, to understand that we are excellent all on our own. We are brilliant all on our own. And if left to our own devices, and the fact is, this is what we could have been if we had been left alone. And to say that all our excellence is not predicated by your allowing us to do anything. Our excellence is not dictated by your saying that we can be. Our excellence and our pride and our beauty and our magic is not dictated by your permission. That's what I want you to get.
Preach.
That's it.
I will drop the mic, but it's expensive.
No, she's 1,000% correct. Each one of these characters exists inside of us all the time. They're not fully realized, but we are these characters. This is who we are. They're not made up. They're drawn, but they're not made up. This brilliance, this beauty, this compassion, this love, that exists in us all of the time. They just pulled it out and drew them into separate characters.
Right, out of the shadows.
This is who we are all the time. Mm-hmm. And we don't need permission. That's the most important thing you said is we. And I feel like I don't need permission anymore to just be as great as I am, which I never did.
Okay, well, I'm going to say to producer Megan Mack, give me a little more information on that. I'm not sure where you're going with that. 90 seconds left here. Some of what Mona just said there, that the characters in the film are drawn for the movie, but they are within you.
Yeah.
In that way, I think it's important to remember, and I think of Angela's email, when you look at Wakanda, even though it's drawn for the film, that's what was taken from us.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that is a country that's quote-unquote fictional, but Wakanda could have been real.
A lot of things.
Any country that had diamonds in it, or any country that had
Because remember, the African continent, it's not a country, people, it's a continent. Mm-hmm. The African continent is the one place on Earth where all of the natural things exist in the same place.
Correct.
Diamonds, gold, oil, silver, copper, all of it.
And we know these things are with us, as Mona was saying. Say, for instance, we've always known that that black guy that is killed off in the first few seconds of any sci-fi movie, we know that that guy could do this, could do that, mm-hmm. but the writers did not give him the opportunity. So it was never that black people did not think that we were capable, that we are capable. It's just the writers that give them the opportunity to show, and as Mona says, show and prove, and that is what Black Panther has done. Yes.
Well, the film is out now. And all of our guests, I guess, are going to go back and see it again.
Yep.
Yes.
No doubt.
At least once more.
Yeah. Before it's out on DVD.
Want to let our listeners know that we've got special NPR coverage coming up. Hate to end the hour with this, but this is the world of breaking news. President Donald Trump is meeting with the Australian Prime Minister, and they are going to be discussing gun control and the Parkland shooting, and you will hear live coverage on NPR of that. I want to thank our guests for being here. Mona Isler, I enjoyed it greatly. Thank you for coming down the hall. And I love working with you and learning from you.
Thank you.
Melanie Funches, Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association of Rochester. And I'll see you soon. Thank you, Melanie. Our thanks to Willis Brooks from Entercom, an actor himself, a box office rep at RBTL. Thank you. Great having you here. And our thanks to Leslie Youngblood. We will be looking for your book, Love Like Sky, coming up this fall. Thank you
November
for being
6th.
Here.
Thank you.
Our thanks to John Andrus for engineering and Megan Mack for producing. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you have a beautiful weekend, and we'll talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.